all the Twitter. Michael Goodell.
That's me.
I'm
on the Twitter.
This is Penn Jillette here on Free FM, and I'm here with Michael Goodell.
And we have
a very special episode.
Yes, we do.
Of the Penn Jillette.
I'm excited.
If you have Gmail you want to write in, which you're probably going to want to during the show, pennradio@gmail.com.
Sure.
And we have on the show a very, very good friend of mine.
Yes.
And that isn't enough to get you on the show. So that that isn't a very important part of the introduction. This guy's Todd Robbins. And I know you played Chicago, haven't you?
He's the author, yeah, right? Yeah. Didn't he write all those books?
Yeah. No. That's
Tom Robbins.
Oh, jeez, I'm sorry.
Todd.
I was so excited.
Todd Robbins. Todd Robbins is a geek, and not the kind of geek, computer geek.
No, old traditional carny geek.
he eats glass, sticks nails up his nose, blows up hot water bottles.
They pop.
Have you done every carny thing?
Just about, yeah. I've tried it all and do a lot of them.
He did a show in New York City. Carnival Knowledge.
That was a subtitle. Kicking a dachshund up a hill for fun and profit.
Todd did a show that I think everybody loved. Everybody that went to it loved it. But yeah. People just wouldn't come because they didn't want to see sideshow skills.
Yeah, it was a really strange thing.
It was called Carnival Knowledge.
Carnival Knowledge, yeah. And we ran for over a year off Broadway, and the situation was people would come. What would happen? I'm going to tip a secret here, that a lot of marketing that is done in theater, they barter seats. They mm-hmm. they basically they'll get an ad and they'll give you 100 tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So we would have people coming to the show that were given tickets that had no idea what the show was. And I got this strange left-handed compliment time and time again from the show. After the show, I'd be standing out in the lobby. It was something that you guys stole from me, an idea, 30 years before I actually did it. I'd be talking to people, and they'd say, you know, if we heard it was a guy eating glass and hammering nails into his nose, we'd never have come. But we're glad we did, and we're coming back.
Well, you know, when we did Off-Broadway, we worked very hard to not say any of the magic stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah,
we
the
worked
M-word,
hard
yeah.
to not say what we were doing. That was a really important thing. We said Penn and Teller because Penn and Teller would sell more tickets than telling people we did amazing stuff.
Sure.
Because when people say amazing stuff, it's almost always a lousy show.
Well, the problem we had is that we had marketing people that I always assume people know what they're doing. That's the first mistake. I continually run into professionals that have no idea what they're doing.
Right.
And I think, well, they're in marketing. I'm not. They know what they're doing. So the first thing they said is, well, we're going to market this to all the tattoo and piercing because that's what it is. And I go, no, it's not. This is twisted family entertainment. It's been that way for 150 years, and it's been done in, what I'm doing has been done in carnivals and amusement parks and circuses, and families have gone to that. So, and they went, no, we know. And then they marketed, and none of those people came, and families came and came back and went, oh, you know, really, this is a family show.
Yeah, well, it's not really, it doesn't have that Jim Rose angle.
No.
Of course, Jim Rose doesn't have the Jim Rose angle anymore.
Well,
but Jim Rose, for a while, really did move 10-in-1 carnival stuff into rock and roll.
Yeah, he found a new venue for it.
But he had people, you know, drinking stomach cocktails, you know, they'd pump someone's stomach.
Bile beer.
Bile beer. The guy would eat a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
They'd pump his stomach. He was a med student, which was so great about it. And they'd pump his stomach and they'd hand it out to people. And really intense, gross out stuff.
Yeah.
That at a big outdoor festival for kids, you know, what, 14, 15 to 20 is mm-hmm. probably a really great thing. But your show was for everybody. And also, you know, and this is the problem we have with the Aristocrats, even though the content is a little close to the bone,
mm-hmm.
The basic idea of the show is intellectual.
It's much bigger, yeah.
Yeah, your show is a very intellectual show and very American and historic,
yeah.
You know.
It packs small, plays big.
And when I saw you, you know, my wife went to see you and was used in your show.
Yes,
before,
yeah, I know.
Before you
knew
who she was.
Yeah.
You used her as the electric girl.
Well, yeah. It seemed like a good idea at the time.
you ran voltage
mm-hmm.
through her body
yeah.
and lit fluorescent light bulbs off her.
Well, you've done worse. So, please. I just did it in front of a whole crowd. What's, you know?
Well, I first met you through a great close-up magician named Jamie Inswiss.
The best.
And you came to movie night.
Mm-hmm.
And you were hanging out a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And we shared this real interest in Sideshow. And the thing I... you know, you are a pure version of many things I thought of. You know,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to be the guy who talked about Sideshow,
yeah.
but wasn't really part of it. I mean, we both know Doc Swan, a dear friend of ours, who really is around our same age,
yeah.
but is a real carny.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and I like to talk about carny, but you're in a whole different space because you really do all the stuff like Doc, and you really talk about it, and yet nobody. Do you have any tattoos at all?
No.
Not one.
No.
Nobody would make you on the street yeah. as any sort of geeked out guy.
Yeah, it's true. And it's my background is very different from, as one carny said to me, you grew up and you had three hots and a cot.
Yeah.
And I love that, you know? Yeah, yeah. And so it was just this whole thing of growing up in Southern California in a suburban community that was not the most exciting place to be as a kid. And instead of turning to the punk rock or drugs, I turned into magic and Sideshow stuff because it was beyond the what was being offered there as a life choice. So now,
I've seen you swallow cockroaches and regurgitate them back up.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the thing you
had to
do
bring it up.
That crosses the most lines for me.
Yeah, but the thing about it is, like so much of this, it's not what you do, it's the framework you put around it.
Oh, no, Todd, it's what you do. Everything else, it's the framework you put around it. But the cockroaches swallowed and vomited back up, you don't have to put much of a frame around that. What kind of gilded frame?
I'm taken aback by this.
I don't even know if I saw you do it in your show.
Yeah, you did. You actually saw an earlier version of it. We were workshopping a thing. And the whole premise is... that
the cockroaches were working for free.
Well, yeah. They have a very weak union. And the whole premise of the thing is that there's one act I won't do.
Right.
And it was the act of the great Waldo, who swallowed small white rats and coughed them back up again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fascinated by him. I wanted to find out everything I could about where
Johnny Thompson.
Yes, I know. Johnny
works with us and works with Chris Angel.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Thompson, I think the most knowledgeable man alive. On magic.
Well, and
of course, since Jay Marshall died. That was not true a year ago, but now the most knowledgeable
man. Yeah, but the great thing about it is Johnny is not a historian. He's not like a Ricky Jay that can tell you facts about it, but Johnny's been there. Johnny's been a performer and understands why things work, and that's very important.
And he worked with the great Waldo.
Yes, he did. He got his start working in a sideshow at the Riverview Park for Dick Best. See, I know far too much about this.
Yeah.
So I do this whole thing about Waldo. I said, well, what would make a man wake up one day and say, you know, I'm going to swallow rats for a living? And I would talk a little bit about that. It's about making impact. It's about doing something that would be remembered.
Mm-hmm.
And that you sometimes have to take it to this level. And that's why I've chosen hammering nails in my nose and eating glass and walking over broken bottles and doing things like that. Because it pierces the din that is assaulting the American public. And... It stands out, and therefore, but it is the one act I wouldn't do because, you know, animal rights people would be on my ass in a second.
And that is the reason, right?
Yeah.
Now, I guess I shouldn't ask you this, but I want to.
Sure.
Did you ever try it in the privacy of your home where no one could tell what you were doing with the rats?
No. I've done many things with the rats, but never, never. And it's also like, you know, there's no profit. There's just no profit. There's no, and even the cockroach bit, I rarely do. I got a call from Letterman to do it about a year and a half ago and did it on that show.
Oh, did you do it on Letterman?
Yeah.
How'd it go?
It's Letterman. How good could it be, you know? I'm fodder for ridicule. That's my job when I go on Letterman. That's what so much of what Letterman is all about. Letterman for the last, 25 years has just removed all joy from show business. Not only in his own show, but he's just poisoned the well and set a tone.
Well, you know, I love Dave. I think he's the best.
He's the best Letterman we have, and there's a lot of contention for that title.
Yeah, he's the best. And when we would do his show in the 80s, when I first went on Letterman, I was really afraid he was going to do to us what he did to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, act like you don't know what you're doing is goofy.
Yeah.
That's the part that makes me crazy. I was terrified that we'd go on and, like, stab each other in the hand and eat needles and stuff like that. He'd go, you know what you guys are doing? You know, that kind of stuff. And we got around it. We were at a time when Letterman really worked with us. And we got to really do great stuff with him. But with you, he uses you so that you do, you're not allowed to say what you're doing is
money. No, there's no rhyme or reason for it. It's just go on so that he can smirk at the camera and go, oh, look, it's a guy in a suit swallowing cockroaches. Now that's entertainment, isn't it, folks?
Yeah. And it is.
I think it is. You know, it's one form. But the funny thing about it is when I did the show, I was in a suit. And he goes, oh, it's so nice. He dressed up. Look, it's the Aristocrats.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Everybody won.
I know, yeah. And the check cleared.
But I got to tell you, you know, it's interesting for me. You know, when people watch the Aristocrats, it's really interesting to me to see what pushes their buttons.
Mm-hmm.
What part of it is the part they go, whoa, that's the part that, you know, kind of made me lean back in my seat. And in your act, when I went and saw you, so much of what you do, I'm very familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Some of what you do, I do myself.
Yeah.
So it's a very different experience for me. And it's great to see the cockroaches and go, that's something I've read about Waldo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm really fascinated by Waldo. But I've never seen... There was one guy who did regurgitation stuff.
Yeah, Stevie Starr.
Stevie Starr, yeah.
Stevie's still around, yeah.
He would do change and stuff.
Yeah. Light bulbs and stuff.
Yeah.
That's a little different than a cockroach, though, in my book.
But he would take a bumblebee and swallow it and then smoke and then bring the bumblebee back up alive and let it fly around.
Did he really?
Oh, yeah.
Was there any gaff on that? Never mind.
Moving right along.
There
was no tape on that whatsoever. No gaff tape whatsoever.
Right, no gaff tape on that.
Yeah, oh, man.
Ask him about the bullets, Todd. Come on.
So you did Carnival Knowledge.
Yeah,
and, you know,
yeah.
You always acted to me, and you always said to me that it was really successful, but you ran here.
Yeah.
And most shows in New York don't finish the first show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Many don't get through previews.
Yeah, it's just that the situation since 9/11, it just seems that there's not been a major off-Broadway hit in New York,
which
is where off-Broadway would be found. when no one is quite sure why. The audience has moved out of the city or whatever, and it just costs so much to market. Mm-hmm. That you're up against Broadway and you just don't have the resources and you're
but you ran for a year.
Yeah.
And there was a paycheck involved in
yes,
that.
There was.
Yeah, you were working.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And for
a guy
who eats cockroaches and eats and you're working, you're
nothing
working
to be ashamed
a year,
of.
And you're working a year in the greatest city on earth.
Nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah. I mean, every time you say that, I always kind of go, what's he talking about? A year, you know, when we went to New York off Broadway, we expected to run 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That was the plan. All the contracts were geared to 3 weeks. That's how long we thought we would last. And we lasted, you know, I guess a couple years.
Yeah.
And then moved to Broadway. It's amazing. You did a year and you had the whole thing set up. And I guess now what we're doing is we're pimping a show that no longer exists.
Exactly.
What are you doing now, Todd?
Yeah, what are you doing now, Todd?
Right. Well, we're working on the new show. We're working on it because the thing, I've always had a great appreciation for all kinds of sort of fringe elements of entertainment and things like that. And I've enjoyed deception. I love deception. And got involved in magic early on. And what I enjoyed about the sideshow stuff is that it was real. I mean, half of it's fake, half of it's real. The irony of it is that what you think is real is probably fake, and that which is fake is you're probably going to think is real. So I would hit people with Carnival Knowledge with reality at its most amazing by hammering nails in the nose, eating glass, and there was no trick. There was no gaffe to it. The new project is the other side, which is a sideshow. A seance show. And it's just deception at its most evil.
Uh-huh.
And the concept of the show is called Dark Deceptions. And it is based on the premise that it's always been fake, it always will be fake, and tonight will be no different. And
how many times you done it? You done it only in New York?
Yeah, we did it at the Fringe back last summer, and it's done very well. It's been optioned, and that's the current project that we're working on right now.
So, it's just a one-man show?
Sure.
Wow.
We're like, well, actually, the theater is 290 seats, so it's a cast of 291.
Uh-huh.
So think of it that way.
But, you know, we've experimented a lot with sand stuff. And one of the things that bothers me is that makes it harder is the present-day psychics, Sylvia Brown, John Edwards. I guess John Edwards kind of forgotten. But
Von Prague just won't die.
Von Prague will not die. He's now a television producer. Those guys do so much less than the guys did in the spiritual heyday.
Oh yeah.
So every time Teller and I would come up with a bit that seemed to use some of the stuff Houdini busted in a really beautiful way, we'd try to put it on stage. It would be just not topical. No one knew the Fox sisters, who were two sisters who were tied up. So far, so good.
Yeah.
Very sexy, very cool. Mm-hmm. But then they would play musical instruments while tied up.
That was the Davenport, but they would just rap in the old version of the word.
Rapping like tapping on something.
Yeah.
The Fox sisters would do. Mm-hmm. And no one is doing that stuff now. So what do you get for tricks? Do you do anything that's contemporary?
Oh, yeah.
We do.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you do?
We do Q&A. We do exactly, but in the context of doing a sort of recreation of what was done in the past, but hitting him right between the eyes of doing exactly what John Edward and Sylvia Brown and Von Prague do.
Well, how do you do that? Because people who come to your show are not believers, is that right?
Well, some do, some don't, but we set the thing up as, with a prologue, giving them a little bit of history and letting them know that it's, from the very beginning, spiritualism has been about two things, fraud and delusion. I'll take care of the fraud, delusion's up to them. And so I asked them to really look at it as if they were believers. And then I assume the guise of a spiritualist minister, fraudulent spiritualist minister, that's redundant. And and then become the Reverend T.L. Robbins. And from there on in, it's done straight ahead as a old-style lecture demo.
And there's not a wink in it at all.
No wink whatsoever.
No wink at all,
and no
joke.
And yet people, because of that, are roaring and laughing at claims of the paranormal. I don't think that's such a bad thing.
That's a fabulous thing. Yeah. fabulous.
And I thought it was going to be very dry, because we had had conversations about this. I talked to Teller about this. And we had had these conversations that, you know, it's hard to get people not to believe. And I've never had that problem. And that's a really beautiful thing.
I want to talk to you more about people not believing. We have Todd Robbins, who is a sideshow geek and a reverend in the Church of Deception. And we'll be talking a lot more to him right after this on the Big Penn Jillette Show. PennRadio@gmail.com. Largest collection of variety artists in one room since Jefferson died alone. We got Michael Goudeau, the juggler in the Lance Burton Show.
Yeah.
We've got
good.
Penn Jillette, the juggler in the Penn & Teller Show. And we have got Todd Robbins, the Robbins in the Todd
Robbins juggled.
Show. You juggled.
I've juggled. I'm not proud of it, but I've juggled.
How much juggling you do?
I used to do four.
Okay. Yeah. Do you have any routine, any work on it?
No. It was years ago when I was in high school. I convinced them that was PE, so I would stand and juggle for an hour.
You grew out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
We did not. You were part of the Long Branch Mystics, right?
Long Beach Mystics. Yeah. A lot of magicians have come out of that. Mm. A lot of other people just got a life. So,
but the Magic Castle has a group of youngsters.
I was along with Mark Kalin, the first junior member of the Magic Castle.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Along with who?
Mark Kalin.
Oh, really? Of Kalin and Ginger?
Yeah, exactly.
And
up in Reno there.
You were the first. You were the first junior member.
Yeah, because what happened is they announced they were going to have this junior society, and I know the people who were organizing it, and they sent out the audition dates, and I wasn't going to be in town. I was actually doing shows out of town. And
what kind of shows are you doing?
I was doing that comedy magic stuff, that funny comedy
in high
magic
school
stuff.
Yeah. Or junior high?
High school.
And what kind of gigs are you playing?
Whatever was paying, you know, everything from birthday parties to organizational shows.
And what'd you do for your, what was that?
Oh, it was good. It was a good act. Professor Cheers rope trick. Now there's a damn good
First
trick.
Of all, what did you wear?
Tuxedo. Of course, tuxedo.
With the ass cut out? Because when you're a young boy, why don't they tell you you can market being a young boy? If you worked magic conventions in chaps, you know, and you were 14, you'd work every magic convention everywhere.
Well, this is true.
But kids don't know that. No. They don't know the power they have. No. So you're wearing a tuxedo.
Yeah, tuxedo.
I'm sorry I got off on the chaps on young magicians.
No, it's quite
that
all right.
That seems inappropriate.
Oh, there's a line?
Free here? FM. Free FM.
There's a line
we'll
across?
Talk about young magicians and chaps.
I don't think that's in Lance's book of advice.
Well, anyway.
Who are you? Yeah. What do you want? Good morning, Lance.
Yeah. Good morning, Taylor.
So what was the act?
It was comedy magic act. Mm-hmm. It was
were some of the tricks?
Professor Cheer's rope trick.
What's that?
You cut and restore rope,
sure.
And then you put it in a bag to disappear, and you show that it's gone, and there's a piece of rope hanging out of your sleeve.
Right.
And then you start to pull, and you pull 50 feet of rope out of your sleeve, and then it kind of gets caught in your pant leg, and you pull it out of the pant leg, and then it gets caught in the other pant leg, and you pull it out, and at the end is your underwear. C'est right. Classique.
Wow.
C'est classique. So,
was that your opener?
No, that was the second. I don't even remember what the opener was. But
you have a strong opener.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, boy. You know,
what name did you work under? Todd Robbins?
Todd Robbins, yeah. Until he got sick of me. And then, you know. So, yeah.
And what was your closer? Do you remember? The Bullet Catch. Same as you guys, Bullet Catch.
Yeah. Boy, you know, it's been so long. I don't even remember what I. I think that was the act. It was just pulling rope out of my pants for 25. 5 minutes for fun and profit. You know, Senator Crandall used to do that. I mean, he would do a rope trick and just keep cutting the rope and just talk and just do a whole monologue and end up not even restoring the rope at the end. And, you know, because who cares?
Nice.
Well, yeah. Will Rogers, too.
Yeah.
A lot of guys holding rope and talking on stage. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't
what
have...
What else do you do with rope?
We're a generation that doesn't have their ventriloquist, you know?
Yeah.
We don't have... Willie Tyler and Lester is the closest we came, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for years, every generation had a ventriloquist. We don't.
No.
We also don't have a guy that has rope in his hand and talks.
Well, no, because all of a sudden, forgive me, but I guess I'm kind of with variety artists here, so it's okay. But showbiz has been taken over by comedians who have nothing but disdain for variety artists because they were. You come out and you do balloon animals or. Forgive me, juggle, and you kill. And then the guy with the microphone standing there, whether they be magicians or jugglers or, you know, whatever else was out there.
Well, Godot always talks about how comedians hate jugglers.
Yeah, well, it's something live happening.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We talk about right now. Right now I'm going to juggle this thing, and this is going to happen. And a comedian comes out and tries to tell you something that happened before.
Yeah.
And that's not as interesting. Generally.
And the other thing is that what I love about the variety arts is if you have a good 12-minute juggling routine, you can work all the time.
Sure.
Yeah.
All the time. But there's no huge upside. There's never been a juggler who's made millions and millions of dollars.
Except W.C. Fields when he stopped juggling.
When he stopped juggling. Well, Johnny Carson juggles, Steve Martin juggles.
Yeah.
We're not counting any of them, you know. There's never been that. Whereas you got Seinfeld, you know, making billions and billions of dollars. And but... other comedians who are at a low level can't work at all.
Right.
So the weird thing is jugglers will always get work, but they'll never be super famous.
Yeah.
And comedians, it's more like playing the lottery than having a job.
Sure.
Variety arts really turn show business into a job, into a grind. Hmm. And I love that about it.
You know, that's what I
like, love, when I would go to 10 and 1 shows, which obsessed me as much as they obsessed you, what killed me, what always breaks my heart is the beauty of someone who doesn't care about the poetry who learns to deliver it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys would learn their acts, ex-cons, guys with no interest in show business, guys with no interest in art, would learn this act to get out of town, to get away from some woman they knocked up in some town. They would learn a fire-eating act or learn blockhead, hammering nails up their nose, or learn some act in the sideshow. They would do it 50 shows a day, 30 shows a day?
Yeah.
Probably 30 shows a day.
30.
And go on the road for 10 years.
Yeah.
And then I would watch them, you know, and against their will, they had learned to be great, great performers.
Sure.
The timing was perfect, and I that's always what I felt a little bit about George Burns. You know, George Burns desperately wanted to be in show business, and by all reports, did not have very much talent.
No.
And then after a large number of years, just flight time, just experience on stage, he was good. And that emergent good is just so fascinating to me. And you don't get it. You don't get it in comedy, because comedians nowadays change material all the time. You really need a new hour every year. You mm-hmm. know, at the heyday of comedy in the 80s, people were doing HBO specials every year. They had a whole new HBO special every year and never got a chance to get really good at it.
Hey, you lose know? The George Carls, you know?
Yeah, George Carl. Well, talk about who George Carl is, because I don't think a lot of people know him.
George Carl was the greatest 8-minute variety act in the world.
Ever.
He did nothing. He came on stage and tried to talk into a microphone.
Well, no, for 8 minutes he tried to...
He wanted to play the harmonica.
And there was 8 minutes of attempting to play a harmonica. And
the struggles involved in that.
And never getting around to it.
And he was on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Yeah, right? and the Tonight Show.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen tape of Johnny Carson
crying,
wiping his eyes after watching George Carl do 3 minutes.
My brother-in-law, when I first got interested in show business and I was first studying crazily about vaudeville mm-hmm. and going to all the, you know, all the files in New York and stuff and going through that stuff and trying to see, you know, who had done these wacky acts and what acts should be brought back, my brother-in-law would always say to me, who's the guy that just did funny stuff on the Ed Sullivan Show? I'm sure you saw him. A little guy, you know, a little guy. And my brother-in-law, who was a rather, you know, from a farm family, and then worked at a nuclear atomic plant up in, Yankee atomic plant, up in Vermont, I think, but up near Massachusetts, and was really a very straightforward, not a jokester at all. I mean, just not a sour man, very happy man. I always loved him deeply, but
somber
is the word I wanted. Very somber man. He would start talking without knowing the name. He would start talking about George Carl and be helpless with mirth.
Yeah. Well, he's just also, you know, he's in what was the movie?
Funny Bones.
Yeah. He appeared in Funny Bones.
He does.
Yeah. There's a couple little bits.
But yeah,
Funny
but
Bones.
They cut it up. I mean, they should have just let him do the act. Yeah, they cut it up.
8 minutes in the middle of just George Carl.
Is his 8 minutes perfect somewhere?
Yeah. Well,
I've seen a couple of tapes on the Tonight Show that were very good.
There was also a special that was done, a circus special, and he did the whole act, and then did at the end, which. If you have a variety act, you end with rhythmic music. So people can
walk. He walks in the circle.
He walks in the circle and does the shrink as he walks off, and it's perfect.
It's shrinking as he walked off that Ed, my brother-in-law, was destroyed by.
Because you think you've seen it all, and he's not going to do anything, and then he gets to the end of it, and you go, okay, it's over, and people are applauding, he's kind of taking, and then he does something else that just kills you.
Did you both meet him?
I did, I worked with him a few times,
Worked with him where?
Great. Here in Vegas, at the Follies Bergere. You know, I hung out with him backstage, met him, it was great. Great guy. It's really funny.
I gotta get that tape. I mean, just for my brother-in-law, I want to watch it with my sister. Because he would laugh about that guy who would just, and he would, you know, the somber New England man would kind of try to do the move. And that was so great.
Because it was so filtered into them. I mean, it was an experience. It wasn't something that they passively just watched.
It was not a story about something happening.
And the other nutty act in show business was always the Banana Man.
I knew
from
A. Robbins.
A. Robbins.
Yeah, there you go.
And not related to you at all.
No, unfortunately.
And the Banana Man, I only knew him from Captain Kangaroo.
Yeah.
But his whole act was coming out in a small cart and producing a whole train and millions of bananas.
Yeah,
right?
Bananas from his pants. What more do you need?
Apparently he smelled terrible.
Well, that's what I've heard.
He smelled terrible?
Yeah, he built all the props himself, and so it was unable to wash them. He had hand-painted all of the bananas.
And there wasn't foam. It was cloth and springs. And so it's just 50 years of sweat was just filled. They still exist. A collector has all the props.
In an airtight room?
The smell lives on.
We're talking about show business, real show business, with Todd Robbins. New York City, the Reverend T.L. Robbins.
Bless you, my son.
We'll be back. We've got a lot more to talk about. tonight on the big free FM, Michael Goudeau and Todd Robbins.
It's good to be here.
Robbins.
You know, every time I hear the music play, I always think that the first thing that's going to come out of your mouth is, "It was a dark night in the big city." It just has that feel.
It was a dark night in the big city.
Yes.
How do you find, you do readings, you said, exactly like John Edwards and Sylvia Brown.
Yeah.
During your show.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into methodology because you won't let me. But what kind of questions are you answering? What kind of things are you doing?
Well, it's... there's questions written down beforehand, before the show, pre to the show, and that information is then used and funneled back.
So you don't.
It's a hot read.
So you don't do anything that's mean spirited. You're not taking stabs in the dark at people's health and relatives and so on, are you?
If there's a profit involved. Well, no. And if we, the thing about it is, we're this, and I've been, we're kind of leery about this because when we did one of the early performances in the Fringe, I was doing something with the memory of a deceased loved one, and the information I went after was, unfortunately, I didn't know what I was asking for. And I asked for someone to, fortunately it was someone I knew, to write down the name of someone that had passed on within a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just wrong. That was so wrong. Mm-hmm. Because when that name was revealed later on, it was too fresh and it was too painful.
Mm-hmm.
And when I looked in that person's eyes, even though I was doing something kind of exposing evil, I felt I was really capitalizing and really doing the very thing I was condemning.
We would do seances, mm-hmm. as you know, mm-hmm. In the 80s. Teller and I tried to start this scam, I guess mm-hmm. is the word. Our job, we wanted to go to people's homes, and they had to be atheist,
mm-hmm.
they had to be totally non-believers, and they had to get the room entirely dark. It turns out all three of the things we asked them for, no one really did.
It's true.
No one would really make sure their friends were atheist. No one really was a non-believer. And no one knows what dark is.
Yeah.
You know.
It's very much like doing a flea circus for real. I mean, you can't see it, and no one really gives a damn, you know? But besides that, you.
I disagree so much.
Well,
I would. Have you ever seen a real flea circus?
No. There's one woman who...
Canada.
Australia.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and she did for a while, and then... Yeah.
We found a guy in Canada when we were in Sin City.
Eddie Dijon.
Is that who it was?
Yeah.
I thought we talked to somebody real.
Well,
I know he was.
Well, maybe Eddie Dijon is, but anyway.
I would love to see a real flea.
I would love to, too.
And, you know...
there's a couple of collectors out there.
How much are you guys willing to pay?
Well,
I don't think it's that hard.
There's a couple of collectors out there that have the props, and I would do it. I mean, I would. I know the work on it. I would put it in.
Well, the work on it is you feed them on your legs.
Crazy glue.
Yeah.
And it's human fleas you use.
There's actually, Walt Noonan is a guy on the web who builds the Gaff flea circuses.
Right.
But he also has done some stuff with real fleas. There's a little video that he has on the web that shows him working with real fleas.
That must be what we saw.
Maybe
we were looking.
They glue a little piece of wire to the back of a flea, is that right?
Or bend it around in a like a little collar.
Right. So it's like fly tying in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Similar hobby.
Yeah.
And they have all these little pieces of thread or wire on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're attached to different gimmicks.
Yeah, like little tiny chariots or a little merry-go-round.
And the thing is, everybody's going to think that this is some sort of gag we're doing.
Yeah.
Absolutely 100% real.
Yeah.
And
best known were Professor Roy Heckler and his father before him, William Heckler, who were at the Hubert's Museum on 42nd Street, the dime museum, where Madame Tussauds is now. There was an old dime museum there that closed back in the 1960s.
And Bobby Reynolds talked that show.
Yes, he did. Fleas that are going to dance. Fleas that are going to lift things and do all this stuff. And for 9 cents, you get the whole show.
Lenny Bruce played that place.
Yes, he did.
Played Hubert's. And he would play up against the half man, half woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy would do a dive onto his head and the flea circus.
Yes.
And then it was Lenny Bruce. That is a night.
That works for me.
That's the perfect entertainment.
I'd pay 25 cents to see that show.
They had a thing at the New York Museum of Natural History of flea circuses.
Mm-hmm.
Where they had some wonderful pictures and a display. But what I was getting at...
Yeah.
Yes. We tried to do this seance. in the dark, and we'd block out the windows. And I would say, you know, everything that I say beyond this point is going to be a lie. The next sentence I would say was, before we get to the lying stuff, and then we would do some ESP stuff. And the ESP stuff we were doing was way, way good. And this is an act we did with both Teller and I talking.
Mm-hmm.
And we would take people into total darkness and hold hands and chant Satan is Lord and do biblical writings on the last time we did it was for Spielberg's bachelor party.
Mm-hmm.
We revived it for that. And it was a really nutty show. And the thing that broke my heart, probably the reason we stopped doing it, not that it was going to be incredibly lucrative or was going to take off, but we were getting some bookings for it, you know, was that we'd finish this whole show, which everything is going to be fake. We'd finish it. Everything was fake, right? 12 people in the room with us. Everything was fake. The lights come on. People have, you know, coffee and cake. And invariably, people would take me aside and say, I know you have to pretend this is fake, but I have some questions I'd like to ask you about someone that I loved that we've lost touch with.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know how to handle it.
Kills you.
It destroys you. So I can imagine doing that, the person who's who died in the past year and looking in the eyes there. And the difference is, you know, the people that do this stuff for real, supposedly, they look in those eyes that see that are desperate and grief-filled and tortured, and they see a way for profit and power, and I have to look away.
Yeah. How bad is Sylvia Brown? I mean, you know, how evil do you have to be?
Yeah.
It's just overwhelming.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. Are there? That was the one time you tried it, but well, now you've got everything so that you don't have to look into those eyes.
Well, now we soften it by saying we're going to make contact with the spirit world. We're going to attempt. And who would you like to meet up again? Who should be a memory that does not cause you any kind of emotional pain, that it is someone that you would like to just see again, a friend, an acquaintance, so we'd lighten the thing up. So it's not someone who died a horrible death that you've been
grieving.
It's not
the ghost of Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
Or your
Do you let them use famous people if they want?
Try not to. Try not to.
Just, this is too obvious?
Yeah. Yeah.
It would be... I mean, everybody would be meeting up with Marilyn Monroe.
Or Elvis, yeah. I mean,
Elvis.
Yeah. There's a handful of them that you can do. You know, there was a guy who did a really, really great question-answer psychic routine that was just based on cold read, that you just go out in front of an audience and you say, now think of a question you'd like to ask, and don't write anything down. And just by doing a cold read answers the questions because everyone comes up with the same question.
You know, this is a great idea.
It is.
A great idea.
Yeah.
You know, when I used to date, people love this, I used to date a woman that was in an improv group. Mm-hmm. You know, she was in an improv.
Yes, you did.
Yes.
There you go. Cold reading at its finest.
And they would do improv in L.A. Mm-hmm. on Sunday night or something, and they would ask for suggestions from the audience.
Yeah.
And they would get the exact, oh, like 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to go see your stupid show.
You're dating her.
Yeah, that's part of the thing you have to do. And they would get the exact same things. And I would say to them, well, why don't you use that? I mean, if every night they're going to say Elvis going into a 7-Eleven to buy dope, why don't you have a 7-Eleven sign and an Elvis outfit? And she'd say, because then people will think we get the same things all the time and it's not really improv. So we try to avoid those. And I would go, oh, man, that's so great. So I'm so happy to hear that someone is taking that idea and using it. It must be amazing, right?
You know, I read the thing. The guy wrote it up years ago.
But you've never seen it.
But no, I just looked at it and went, oh, this is. And what you do is you look out in the audience and you do demographics. You go, okay, there's 25% of the people are between these ages, and it looks like, you know, then they're women or they're men or whatever. And you then know what questions you're going to answer.
And do you remember some of them? What did you do?
I don't offhand, but it was just really great. It was broken down and it was just evil. The irony of it is, the guy who did this was a TV producer, and he dabbled in mentalism, and his name is the same name of a guy who is now talking to the dead. Not one of the big three, but actually one of the guys who started the whole talking to the dead. I won't use his name because I don't want to publicize this guy. But yeah, he, so it's just kind of funny. When I saw like the name come up, I went, oh, it's not the same guy.
And there's like a magic book on this.
Yeah.
Oh.
Put out by Magic Incorporated, our good friends, yeah. Magic Inc. in Chicago.
Boy, that's great. Do you know the name of it?
It's
Or do you not want to say it on the radio? Or do you?
Okay.
I'll get it from you. I mean, I can see there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
If someone really wants it, if a young Todd Robbins is listening, they'll find a way to get it.
Yeah, it's mentalism that's really dynamite. which is the name of the book, Dynamite Mentalism, so there you go. So,
Well, Todd, it's just amazing how many of the things you've done are just alternate universe from stuff that I really was fascinated by. I mean, Carnival Knowledge is a show that I always felt I should have done, but wasn't talented enough, didn't really have it going. The Seance show is something I tried and failed at.
You want to buy them? You can have them.
They're for sale.
Doing a great job. Todd Robbins, if you're in New York or anytime, and you see Reverend, Dark Deception.
Dark Deception, yeah.
See Dark Deception.
Or just go to ToddRobbins.com. The information will be there.
ToddRobbins.com. Two D's or one D, Todd?
Two D's, two B's, or not two B's, that is the question.
And so he did the whole thing with the total cold reading.
People
can look that up.
It's so pure. I mean, it's just so great because nothing's written down and it's evil. It's
and what else
evil.
Do you do? What else do you do in your show? What other?
Well, we do all the kind of manifestations. We give you a Hollywood seance in that, you know, when the lights go out, all hell breaks loose.
You get ectoplasm.
Oh yeah, all you can eat.
Well, Marjorie.
Yeah.
You know her granddaughter.
I know.
Is a friend of mine.
That, I know. We have to talk about that.
I know
Believe
her.
Me. Yeah.
And we had a nice talk. Her husband was it. Really in the club scene in New York and knows Debbie Harry. We have a lot of mutual friends.
There you go.
And she gave me a book of the spirit photographs with a picture of her grandmother. And you know Marjorie, who is the psychic that Houdini did finally bust, but maybe not. Probably not.
She was really good. She was the best, really.
And also really sexy.
Yeah.
I mean, goofy sexy.
She had a hand coming out of her vagina.
Yeah.
As a manifestation.
And there's a picture.
That's show business right there.
An ectoplasm.
Yeah.
And there's a picture of that in the spirit show.
Yes, sir.
And Anna talked about going to the show and seeing nude sexual pictures of her grandmother in a spirit medium show.
Well, who hasn't seen that kind of stuff? If they haven't, they should. You know,
Anna claims, that they were never believers.
Yeah.
They were just strictly scammers. And that Houdini was very fond of them. Actually get along with them socially very, very well. But it was this very successful doctor and his breathtakingly slutty wife who pretended to be talking to the spirit world and really just let strangers feel his wife up for money.
Because they could.
It's a perfect perfect life. Are you letting strangers fill your wife up for money?
If there's a profit involved, honey, we have to talk.
That's the Reverend T.L. Robbins. Todd Robbins. Go to his website. We got to have you on again. Todd Robbins is Penn Jillette, Free FM.
Thank you.